Right now, we're going to jump to Alan Ackerman, who I believe I have on the line. Are you there, Alan?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Thank you so much for joining the Green Majority today. As I introduced at the beginning of the feature, generally we're a nationally syndicated program. We're very thankful to have listeners all across the country and even some international. So generally we try and stay away from super local issues. But as I was introducing at the beginning of the show, this is so local that I can almost like throw my pen at the campus, at the area that we're talking about right now. So I felt like we should take some time to deal with it. And obviously has larger implications as well. So what came across my desk basically was I got an email about just a notice. I don't recall who it was. I believe it was from a mutual acquaintance of ours, Stephen Sharper. But yeah. It was just saying that basically there were some folks were upset about some changing over of some green space. And I said, well, you know, my initial reaction was kind of, what else is new? This sort of happens constantly. But it's a little bit more than that. And the issue is a little bit more fleshed out. So why don't you give us your sort of overview of exactly what it is that the university is trying to do here and the specific points that you feel that we're trying to stop this for? Why are you against it?
Well, I think this is a perfect case of thinking globally and acting locally and should be pertinent to people all over the country. Well, we're concerned about the plan at the University of Toronto because this is a very large green space on the downtown campus and one of the largest green spaces in the downtown core of Toronto. We're particularly concerned about questions of student access and actually access for the general public to the back campus. But we're also concerned about potential environmental sustainability impacts, tearing out a natural surface and putting in a synthetic turf. Creates very intense heat island impacts, which increases urban warming, let alone global warming. There are also impacts on water runoff. It's a very, very hard surface. And basically, they're taking out not only the grass, but all of the soil, replacing it with 36 inches of sterile fill, covered with porous asphalt, and then green nylon. We're also concerned because this is a heritage landscape, and the City of Toronto and the University of Toronto's own documents have designated it as a cultural heritage landscape, which has an important history in the city and also part of the history of the University of Toronto as well. So these are some among many of our concerns. Incidentally, we're also concerned because there's a brand new field hockey field that's just been built up in Brampton, and we're not sure why exactly we need to tear out this central urban green space to make two permanent Olympic-level field hockey fields, whereas this is a technically open space in the University of Toronto.
So there's a few key points there that I'd like to get to you to explain a little bit further. So, I mean, my introduction of sort of calling it astroturfing isn't even correct enough. Can you just go over it again in a little bit more detail, like exactly what they're going to do? So they're going to be digging down, how deep did you say, into the backfield?
Well, more than 36 inches. AstroTurf, I believe, is a technical term that's used for turf in the U.S., but this is a synthetic turf that's made of nylon, basically, and plastic. It's going to be covering a surface of porous asphalt, and underneath that, stone and tile. It has to be a very, very hard surface due to the requirements of high-level field hockey. And it's very specific for field hockey. So the manufacturer's own documentation indicates that there are many other usages that can't be, that is casual uses that can't go on the field. And this also has a big impact on how, for example, a heavy rainstorm will run off because it's so hard. That water will run off very quickly into the ground sewage system. And also, as I said, you know, this, we already have a synthetic field just across the block at Varsity Field. In effect, this is turning the back campus into a field like the Varsity Field, even though the City of Toronto and U of T's own documentation makes a distinction between those two kinds of spaces. The heat island impact, as I mentioned before, has been proved by our own Professor John Danahy at the Faculty of Architecture, Landscape and Design, and he shows that the Varsity Field, for example, generates heats that can rise over 30 degrees Celsius higher than what the surrounding heat is in the city. So this has a big impact not only on, you know, people on campus, students and faculty and so forth, but also on anybody who lives in the downtown core, not to mention, you know, if one is concerned about global warming, and we would hope U of T would be a leader in you know, environmentalism and be concerned about the planet, just as a role model, this contributes, you know, even in principle, to the degradation of, you know, the environment.
So one of the things that that we just want to like kind of isolate there first is, so you're saying they're digging 3 feet down, all the porous concrete, nylon. So this is basically like, other than actually the visual color due to dye, this is the least possible green. Absolutely nothing could grow. We're not talking about like there's no weeds, no nothing. Pretty much anything covered by this is been not only not alive, but is preventing anything live from growing there. So it's literally almost like a little dead zone.
Absolutely. It's basically paving it. They're paving it, and, you know, there have been a couple of plants that have gone through or been presented in the past 20 years, both of which have been rejected, and, you know, our colleagues in the Faculty of Architecture, again, say that if you were going to build a building in this site, you would have to put a green roof on it to compensate for the, again, for the heat island impacts, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I should add, but as you said, nothing grow on it. You know, you're not allowed to. That is the manufacturer's manual indicates that you can't allow, for example, leaves from deciduous trees to fall upon the turf because algae can grow upon it, and the turf itself has to be maintained by spraying. At least the manufacturer's documentation indicates spraying a biocide against the turf, which obviously would then run off in the water, in order to prevent the growth of algae and other bacteria.
Hmm. All right. So let's move on to one. I mean, that doesn't sound terribly great, but let's move on to another issue, which is that a lot of the time, you know, institutions or organizations or cities, for instance, are left in a situation where they're left to and sort of forced to pick the better of two bad options. So to try and cut them some slack here and not make it entirely one sided, do you have any sense of what the university's perspective is this on? Why are they? Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get a representative from the university. So can you maybe do your best explanation of why they're pursuing this? What is the motivation? Why spend this money at all?
Well, sure. The university wants to make wants the space, and I should say the plan has been proposed by the Faculty of Physical Education and Kinesiology, and in effect, they would own the space. And they want to own the space because they want to make it accessible to their students. The university, and you know, to be fair, a lot of students want to play more sports and need to have spaces on campus to do so. But I don't think this is the answer to it. In other words, in fact, I think in the long run, this is not going to make the space more accessible to students. On the contrary, to make revenues out of this space, the university is already planning to rent it to outside, for example, field hockey groups. They're expecting revenues up to $250,000 a year. That's a lot of renting. On the other hand, I should say that we're not opposed at all, that those of us who are contesting the turning of the natural space into a synthetic space, we're not contesting at all the idea that it could be renovated or better maintained. Furthermore, if there's some benefit to be got from the Pan Am Games, and this project is being funded in part by the federal and provincial governments for the Pan Am Games in 2015, we would much rather see, for example, the construction of a new soccer pitch that perhaps would be less costly. I should say, too, that this synthetic turf is going to have to be completely replaced about 10 years. That is, the life of the turf itself is not forever, and it, too, will have to be torn out and replaced probably within 10 years, certainly in less than 20 years. So we would much rather see the university and the government perhaps construct a soccer pitch that could be used for the Pan Am Games, even as a practice field. So I'm not at all opposed to, none of us would be opposed to them improving the space, making more use of it for student activities, but many activities, both curricular and extracurricular, will be shut out because there's a wide range of usages that you can't do on a field hockey pitch.
All right. Well, a couple more issues here before we get before we let you go. Unfortunately, we're running a little shy on time. One of the things I wanted to mention as well was that you did have a petition mounted on change.org. I actually found that before I read it on the notes that you sent, before your own notes. It came up in one of my searches for background. So I noticed that you've got, at current, you've got just shy, unless it's changed since late last night, just shy of 3,500 signatures, including very prominently, they're featured at the top, Margaret Atwood, who's not shy at all about voicing her opinion behind civic issues here in the city of Toronto and elsewhere that she feels strongly about. How much should people take from, like, is this something where, you know, you have 3,500 and that's really impressive, but you think 10,000 is the number? Or what sort of indication of your success or progress do you take that? Do you feel like you have had some success at this point?
Oh, sure. I think that is, you know, everyone who learns about the project, it expresses surprise. And the petition has been one of numerous ways of sort of expanding awareness. I should add that, you know, although technically speaking, this plan was public access, last year when it went through governing council, very few people knew about it. I learned about it with my other colleagues and students at University College when it was presented to us only this past November. When we learned about it, we passed a motion opposing the plan, and 31 out of 34 people joined the motion to oppose it. None were against the motion, and the point is that how were we all so surprised by it if there was if it had been a transparent process before? So the petition is one way of getting awareness out. We've had very prominent members of the university community, but also, as you point out, Margaret Atwood, who's also an alumna of the University of Toronto. We've had members of government signing onto the petition. Other people who have supported us include, the city planner, Richard Florida, who also teaches at the University of Toronto. Very, very prominent alumni, students, faculty, and also just concerned citizens. That is, not only members of the university have signed on to the petition.
All right. So I'm afraid that's all the time we have for that today. I want to thank you very much, Alan Ackerman, professor of English at the University of Toronto, among many other things. Thank you very much for taking your time today. Do you want to just let people know where they can access some information about this? And I want to point out as well that if you're a resident of the city of Toronto, or if you think this issue is important, please do go and check out the information there, and you can sign the petition or do whatever. But also, the information that you have here, Alan, has I think very interesting to anyone who's interested in sort of accessing university infrastructure at any university anywhere in Canada, because it can be a very tricky process here, and the information that you've sort of put together, I think, would help people understand how about to go to interact with their university on other issues.
Yes.
So I think that would be a very good resource for just about anybody. Do you want to let people know where they can get access to more information about this?
Absolutely. We have a Facebook page, and you can find it. It's Keep the University of Toronto Back Campus Green. Keep the Back Campus Green. And on that Facebook page, you can also sign our petition, and I encourage the listeners to do so if they can. And there's a lot of posts from people like Margaret Atwood and other prominent people in Canada, and frankly from around the world, who are concerned about this, not only because of University of Toronto, but as a model for other urban developments elsewhere. So thank you very much for having me. I hope people sign the petition. Keep the Back Campus Green.
All right. Thanks so much, Alan. And we're going to take one last quick music break here. We'll be right back to finish up the program with Kevin Farmer. Stay tuned.